And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. David, we have titanic events happening throughout the country, and I have a feeling that one of the best ways we have of understanding the impact of it all is by looking at how it affects life at home. And I have in mind our school board in Scranton, because the school board in Scranton is at the same time the biggest government entity in Scranton. It has the biggest budget, bigger than the city. It has more employees, more than the city. It plays a very important economic role, both in terms of the number of people it employs and the fact that it takes care of all the kids of all the people who have to go to work. And and everybody has seen now how important the babysitting function is now that the schools everywhere in the country are closed. I wonder if you could review for us what is the critical state of the school board and therefore of the school system today in Scranton?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the school district hit the iceberg a long time ago. They just didn't realize it. They've been trying to bail out in all sorts of ways the financial problems that they've had. And what's happened is that because of their severe financial hardship, they borrowed a lot of money to really cover unbalanced budgets. And that goes into the fact that in large part, we don't have a proper reassessment of property in the city. And we have in the city of Scranton, you have somewhere around 35 or 40% of the city is exempt from property taxes, being nonprofits or whatever. The universities, the hospitals, the religious institutions, the charitable organizations, et cetera. And so, and you've also had mismanagement over the years.
But also you had a reduction in state aid from 50% of the school budget to 30% of the school budget.
Yeah, somewhere around that. And ironically, it was the Scranton Times and not anybody at the school district that uncovered the fact that even under the current or the recent budget allocations, the city wasn't getting what it should have gotten. The school board wasn't getting what it should have gotten by, I think it was $10 million a year or something like that. But what happened is the school district went into distress, and the state came in and they appointed a woman by the name of Finan, to do an assessment. She was a former superintendent elsewhere, and as to what could be done in terms of putting the school district on solid footing.
And that's not uncommon throughout the country.
No, right. And she came in with a report, and about that time, the superintendent that was there, who was hired under some questionable circumstances, they brought her in from Georgia, and nobody knew really where she, even though she had Scranton roots, why she was selected over other people. She left the district, and so they had a vacancy, and it was recommended, and the school board chose Finan to now become the superintendent and to give her extraordinary powers that would normally be relegated or delegated to the school district in order to run and to try to get out of this financial hole, because the alternative would have been for the state to take over the school district. And they didn't want the state to take over the school district. They wanted something local. Now, fast forward, the school district supposedly is to be run by 9 directors. There was turmoil, and there was questions about some of the directors being involved in scandals and what have you. Ultimately, there was an election last November, and I can't remember whether it was 4 or 5 seats were up. I think it was 4 seats. And there was a new all of them were the so-called insurgents were elected, mostly women, to the school board. Come December, we started to get an attrition of the school board. The school board takes its oath of office in December, and one other member left the school district because he said he was moving out of town. And over time, we've had a couple of them. One got elected in November to the city council, and then there became another vacancy on city council, and in a special election, one of the school board members, I'm sorry, it wasn't a special election. It was an election by the other members of council. They chose a school director to be replacement on council. So now you have another vacancy on the school district. And that one has to be filled now. So the upshot is we now have, out of 9 people, only one director who has been in place prior to December, 4 months ago. These are all newbies on the school board at a time when they need to have a steady hand and a counterweight to some of the things that the extraordinary powers that have been given to the school superintendent have produced. And the school superintendent has made it known that she wants to cut back on pre-K education. She's going to phase that out over 2 years, and there could be school consolidations where more neighborhood schools are shuttered. And so we have that.
And this is all because of lack of money.
Yes. Primarily, it's a lack of money and a mismanagement in prior years.
Right. But but I can't imagine that the mismanagement equaled 30% of the budget, whereas the cut in state aid did equal 30% of the budget. Right.
I mean, the cynics would say it wouldn't matter if the state gave us more money, we'd misspend it anyway. But that's, you know, that wouldn't be all that money. It really needs, it goes to the philosophy of governance and the philosophy of government. And remember, the Republicans for years have been saying we have to starve the federal beast, that the best government is the one that's closest to the people. And there's nothing closer to the people than a school directorship. Do you remember the movie Dave?
Yes.
And there was a question in there when it was asked, when Dave asked about the vice president, or he had a conversation with the vice president about how he got started in politics. And I believe the vice president said that he'd started on a school board or something like that. And of course, Dave, after serving as the surrogate president, went back and he was running on a local campaign, the grassroots.
But here we have a school board which is totally undemocratic. I mean, it's not elected by the people.
Well, it's democratic in that that's the party they affiliate with. But yeah, but it's not elected by the there's still a majority that were elected by the people, but they're all, a whole number of them have been appointed, and they're inexperienced, and they're running a huge, huge operation, or supposed to run, or at least run a check on it.
But and the real story here is the feds are not giving the state the money, and the state is not giving the locality the money. Correct. And the locality, therefore, can't find people who are willing to undertake the well-nigh suicidal task of trying to educate kids without the resources to educate the kids.
Yeah.
Right? And we see this happening now with the bailout on a federal level, because the Republicans in the bailout, which has to be refunded again because the money they appropriated 3 weeks ago is gone, they don't want to include money for the states. And that money goes to the school boards for the most part.
The states and the local governments, right.
Yeah.
They also, by the way, they also don't want to include it for hospitals and healthcare institutions.
So how why is that? So why is that? Here we have a situation where the greatest problems are handled by the schools and the hospitals. And that's the one thing the Republicans seem united in not wanting to pay. How do you explain that?
Well, they say we could take care of that later, but then the Democrats don't have the leverage later on.
How will they take care of it? Now is the time.
Now is the time. Well, I guess go back to the cynic in me again. They can't funnel this money to the big boys that they want to funnel it to. Because when you give it to the states, the feds lose control. When you give it to the local, like a school district, you know, Mitch McConnell isn't going to be able to get the money to Elaine Chao's relatives on the shipping industry.
Right.
Or and Donald Trump isn't going to be able to funnel the money to his big donors or to get the money to bail out developers or what have you.
Right.
It doesn't matter, you know, about oversight. He has no control. You know, it's a loss of control of things that they want to get their money to. And let's be real about this. Trump is playing politics as much as anything else. You know, he's allocating assets for fighting this Corona 19 virus by political favor. He's giving money to states, over money to states that they don't need, and he's shortchanging the states, the blue states, like Illinois and New York and Wisconsin and especially Michigan. Now he's really attacking Michigan because the governor of Michigan is a woman who's on Joe Biden's short list to be vice presidential, and he wants to make her the new Hillary, the poster child. They always pick on a woman, you know. They had that protest this week that he was encouraging, and some of the chants were "lock her up." You know, it's always "lock her up."
It's right.
You know, they don't like it when Michael Flynn, when the protesters stand outside the courthouse and yell "lock him up," Trump says, "Well, I'm going to pardon him," or he's thinking about pardoning him, but "lock her up," even though there's been no crimes committed. That's the whole idea.
Well, there have been crimes committed, but they've been committed by the Republican administration.
Yeah, which we are going to be buried by Bill Barr for as long as they can bury them, and by the pardon power. If we're lucky enough to have Biden win and we get a Democratic administration, what we need is something along the lines of what Nelson Mandela did when he finally overcame apartheid, and have some sort of a truth and reconciliation committee. And first thing about that is you have to have a truth. We're going to need to have an expose of all these things, and the Republicans are going to yell and scream, you know, that's in the past. Don't look at it. We got to deal with what's here now. But to know the extent.
Well,
of
but
the,
you know, when Obama had a chance to do that, he didn't do it. In fact, he said specifically, "I'm against doing that."
Yeah.
Don't
I know.
Look at the past. Look to the future. Well, the future was worse.
Well, you know, Obama had a unique situation. He was the first African American, and he had to be careful about things that he did. But he also, he also had Eric Holder in there. And Eric Holder was who had once served in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Middle District of Pennsylvania. That's here. You know, he came from a law firm that represented big business.
Right.
He wasn't about to do that. I mean, you know, he was looking at his future after the attorney generalship.
Well, that doesn't bode well. I mean,
no, we'll have to see. Now, of course, if Biden is there, one of the things you might see is a Kamala Harris as attorney general or something.
Well, she wants to be vice president.
I know she wants to be vice president. And so that was an interesting thing. As the commentators said, usually when people are asked about, would you accept the vice presidency? People are kind of coy, particularly when they're running, of course, that they want to say, I want the big thing. But this week they've asked a number of women who, whether or not they'd accept the vice presidency from Joe Biden. And they've all said yes. Kamala Harris said yes. Elizabeth Warren said yes. Stacey Abrams said yes. And I think Amy Klobuchar certainly would say yes.
Well, Amy Klobuchar said yes 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well,
I'm glad I joined the team. She thought she got the nomination already.
Well, I think she had it until Gretchen Whitmer appeared on the scene. And, of course, that's why they're after Whitmer. And I was a little disappointed in Whitmer. Because I think she needed to be a little more feisty. When you're the vice presidential candidate, you've got the job of being the nasty one. You've got to do the attacks, and that befits a Dick Cheney type of personality. But the attack dog for the Democrats is Andrew Cuomo.
That's right. And
I mean, he had a monologue this week that was stunning. You know, the day after he said, "I'm not going to get into a fight with the president. I'm reaching out my hand." He said some pretty strong and nasty things about it, and that was one of the things that went viral.
And Trump, I think Trump this week lined up with all the most rabid right wingers in the country in demonstrating against all of the health public health measures that everybody who studies these things says you have to do. These people regard them as an infringement on their liberty, which of course they are. They are an infringement on your liberty, and you do it so you shouldn't die. They say, no, we're going to do it. We're going to demonstrate. We're going to have meetings. We're going to violate the social, stay-at-home rules and all that stuff because we want to do that. Because it's un-American to force us to what? To fight the virus? That's un-American? Why is that?
Well, we have that whole history of people being short-sighted, and we have this whole idea of that's happened within the Republican Party over the last 30, 40 years, where they reject things like science. They reject reality in many respects. And, of course, that's part of their rejecting of government. Government, by its very nature, is a constraint on liberty. The whole issue is, to what extent are we going to constrain liberty? You know, are we going to take away your right to vote? No, but we're going to take your right to infect other people? Yeah. And it's one thing for someone to say, I don't care about my life. But when you're dealing with an infection, what happens is you endanger other lives. And that's why the government has a role in this, to say we're not going to allow you to endanger a whole number of other lives. And the fact that you can't see that or don't understand that means, is no reason to allow you to continue to do that.
Right. But in this case, the government, in the person of the president, wasn't saying we're not going to allow you to do that. Just the opposite. Yeah. He said, get out there and do it. Get out there and do it. Your Second Amendment rights are being infringed. Your religious rights are being infringed. Don't let these guys infringe it.
Well, and that religious thing is something that's it's coming up in front of the Supreme Court, and I'm afraid our side is going to lose on this. As it's been once described, can you use your religion as a shield or as a sword? These people see it as using it as a shield when, in fact, they're using it as a sword. We're imposing our religious priorities upon everybody else. And how dare you impose yours on us? So they want to – we exempt religious organizations from the mass gathering type of thing because the evangelicals want to have these big rallies. We had that happened on Easter Sunday here in Lackawanna County, where one of the big churches – one of these evangelical churches had someone preaching from the rooftop, and the people gathered in cars in the parking lot, which technically is keeping social distancing, but then they were getting out of the cars and they were mingling. And there's that situation where they use the excuse of religion to violate healthcare restrictions. And we've seen this all along. We've got people who don't want to be who want their kids to go to school unvaccinated. It violates my religious ideas.
It's the same people.
It's the same people. It's that same group.
Yeah.
And, of course, what we've seen, we have to understand that it's still a minority. It's a distinct minority, but they're able to garner a lot of publicity. It gets magnified by the right-wing media, the Breitbarts and the Fox News, and the national media, the mainstream media, overplays it as well because it's got good visuals on that. But you look at these rallies, and like you said, it's the same people. You see Confederate flags. What does the Confederate flag have to do with a coronavirus epidemic? Nothing, you know, and you see the politicals, the MAGA hats, and it's reminiscent of the Tea Party type of thing. You remember the keep your government out of my Medicare type of mentality. Those that are ignorant of the facts and politically ignorant of what's really happening and how they're being used are more than willing. And of course, there's a lot of pent-up frustrations. Some of them just want to get the heck out of the house.
Well, I can understand wanting to get out of the house, and I can understand needing to go back to work. But the truth of the matter is that at the moment, it's the anti-public health people who seem to have the ear of everybody, and the people who are trying to cope with the epidemic in a way that's beneficial, it doesn't get people killed. We don't see their political effectiveness. We don't see them as a force with anywhere near the organized strength of the anti-public health people, the pro-Trump people. I think that's terrible. I mean, this is a struggle. This is a political struggle for public opinion. And if we don't have the coming together and the coordinated working together of everybody who has the best interests of humans involved, not the best interests of property owners, profit makers involved, we can't win. I mean, the Democrats, the environmental groups, the labor unions, all the civic groups, all the public health groups, the medical community, they all have to get in there and explain to the 70% of the people who don't know what the hell is going on, what is going on.
Yeah, right. But there's this desperation in the Trumposphere because of the fact that Trump's one real winning argument was the economy. And he kept saying, we've had the greatest economy ever. The stock market is hot. Look at it. It's higher than ever. More people are working. Remember, and he talked about the minority communities. More African-Americans have jobs than ever before and all of this. And within 3 or 4 weeks, this has all come crashing down. The report came out this week, and another 5.2 million Americans have filed for unemployment, which puts us, you know, at about 22 million plus people who are unemployed.
There's 22 million who filed in the last 3 or 4 weeks, plus the several million who were already unemployed.
Unemployed, right. So by one estimate, Steve Leisman on CNBC said we don't know exactly because the numbers are still coming in, but he put the unemployment rate at somewhere between 12 and 20%. Deutsche Bank came out and said they think it's as high as 17%. And I heard one report, and I can't remember from who thought it could go between 25 and 30%. And to put it in perspective, at the low point of the Depression, on the day that Franklin Roosevelt took office in March of 1933, it was at 24%. One in every four Americans was workers was without a job.
And you know that if you look into the structure of the people who are unemployed or the structure of the communities of America, if the general unemployment rate is, let's say, 20%, you know that the unemployment rate among young African Americans must be over 50%.
Yeah. And don't forget, we also had that underground economy where people were employed off the books or whatever. And they're also, you know, and they're not filing for unemployment because they weren't on the books.
Right.
So and they're losing jobs.
So meanwhile, the federal government unveiled this bailout program, this relief program, $2 trillion relief program. The money's gone already, but nobody's got the money.
Right. And for a variety of reasons, part of it was the way it got rolled out. And the money doesn't go directly to people. It was going to banks to be distributed to people. And, of course, the banks, you know, if they get the money, they use this as a float, either intentionally or unintentionally, by making it harder for people or not having rules for people, small business owners, to file, to be able to get this money or to track this money.
From the bank's point of view, they have some of them have a real out. In other words, the government did not make it clear that the banks would be held harmless if the loans defaulted. So the banks, therefore, took the attitude that if they are not going to be held harmless, they've got to treat these loans like they treat any other loan, and they would only make loans to people that they or companies that they already had made loans to because they had already vetted their credit worthiness. But that's not the point of the program. The point of the program is to give people and companies money to pay their workers.
Right. Well, you know, the definition of a banker is someone who lends money to only to people who don't need it.
Yes, exactly. Right. Which is, and this program is not supposed to be that, but that's what it became.
Right.
That's what it became. So,
right.
It was bound to fail from its conception.
Yeah. And they didn't learn any of the lessons from the bailout in the mortgage market from 2008, which also had some murky rules and regulations and did not trickle down to a lot of people. And a lot of ordinary people lost their homes as a result.
Well, there's no particular reason why this administration should have learned how to run a program properly, because first of all, they don't agree that the government should run any programs. They
right.
didn't agree to these programs. They were kicked. They were dragged into it.
Plus,
and
the
they
fact
made
is,
sure that they have no oversight over how they do it.
Right. And I think that's a major factor. You know, that there's been a fight now to replenish the money that has already run out on the small business loans allocation. And the Republicans want to throw $2 billion more, or is it billion or trillion? I can't remember.
It can't be billion. That's not enough.
Yeah. More into the pot. And they would say they want a quote unquote clean bill. But their clean bill, again, goes right to your point. They don't have oversight. The Democrats are insisting on not only oversight, because they know they can't trust the Trump administration to do it, but they also want to have the money go to state and local governments and to go to the hospitals. I mean, can you imagine the Republicans say, no, we don't want the money to go to hospitals or healthcare facilities at this point? And as we
but
said,
they do the, say the re- it. They are saying yeah, it. Yeah,
I know. And the reason is, once you get it down to those levels, they can't shuffle this money off to themselves. You give it to the state of Pennsylvania, they're not going to give it to the to Donald Trump's rich friends. You get it to the Scranton School District, they're not going to give it to Mitch McConnell's wife's family's shipping company.
And that's the point. That's why looking at this thing from the viewpoint of the Scranton School District really illuminates the horrible policy and the horrible implementation of the policy that the Trump administration has engaged in. It's a real condemnation of them. And it's easy to see it if you look at it from the school board point of view. And that is how people look at it, because the Scranton school board point of view is the same as the worker, the average worker in the community who hasn't gotten his check yet, or the small businessman who can't even figure out how to apply for the check.
Right. And of course, and you hit it, they're also, and we don't say this in a pejorative sense, they're the babysitters. How can I go back to work if I don't have my kids aren't in school?
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, we have a week coming up that we have more struggle about this. We're going to have more right-wingers claiming, as Trump claims, that the worst is over, whereas the worst is only over if we have adequate testing. And right now, we're doing about 20%, according to the Harvard Public Health School, we're doing about 20% of the amount of testing that needs to be done in order to be able to say that you could safely open up the economy.
Well, remember, on March 6th, Donald Trump said anybody who wants a test can get it.
Yeah.
And, of course, they botched that. And Fauci's been out there. Dr. Fauci explained there's actually two types of tests, one to see if you have the virus, and then they're talking about this antibody test to see if anybody has had it, because they can use that later on to establish immunities and who might
right.
be able
but
to go
that
back
But that test
to
has not yet been invented, so that's a problem.
No. Yeah.
All right. We'll talk about this more, unfortunately, next week. See you next week.
See you next week.